Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, Will T, and the homie Ray Jeezy is out, and we are part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. Will T, what's good, my man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm here, man. You know what I'm saying? It's a wild day, man.
That was very unenthusiastic, man.
What you trying to say? Like, what you mean? Like, I wasn't hype? I didn't sound good? What you trying to say?
Your response was very unenthusiastic.
Was it really?
Let's get the energy right, man. It's Tuesday, talking sports. I mean, specifically baseball, trade deadline. A lot went on today. Team that's up 95, the Orioles, the local hometown team, Washington Nationals.
So I'm ready to discuss everything.
Yeah, man. You know, I'm hyped, man. This episode is called The Urban Sports Scene Beltway Baseball Swag. So we there, man. We here, bro.
Absolutely, man.
You know what I'm saying?
We're in August now, so less than 45 days away from everyone's Sunday religion.
Yeah.
Oh, football.
Yeah. It's coming. Definitely is. But you know, I'm an Oles fan. I'm excited. You're a Nats fan. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, you're on a different
level. I'm not excited.
Look, man, I tried to be PC with it, bro. There's younger players coming up. So there should be some excitement, right, Will T? For a Nats fan.
We'll get into it later on. In theory, it should be. But, you know, you traded away the all-star, you know,
yeah,
a guy who's having an all-star season, and Josh Bell, and the guy who made the all-star team, and Juan Soto.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, but we'll get into it. Like you said, we'll get into it. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And don't forget to subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Hit that subscribe button, and also hit us with a few likes. It's always good for us when you hit us with a few likes on our videos. This show could be found on Podcast DC, the local app, with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content.
Don't forget to tweet Wole and Ray at Urban Sports Team. Just know that I'm not on social media or anything, so if you get a response from one of those guys, hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Baltimore Orioles trading outfielder and first baseman Trey Mancini and closer Jorge Lopez. New to the show, Josh Lynn from Birds Watcher. We'll jump on as a guest. Finally, talk Nats Kevin Nibley. We'll jump on the show to talk about the Nats trading away Juan Soto to the San Diego Padres. But first, right now we have site expert for Birds Watcher, Josh Lynn, on the line. What's up, Josh, and welcome to the Urban Sports Scene.
Hey, how you doing, my guys? Nice to be on.
Great to have you on, my man.
Thank you, man. It's a pleasure. Great to have you on, man.
Hey, but so
help us make some sense. Help us make some sense of what went on at the trade deadline for these Orioles. I know Wole wants to get into it, but
yeah. Before I do that, I want him to get plug his stuff though. We'll get into that though. Let's plug him.
Exactly.
Yeah. His stuff, you know what I'm saying? Before we get started, could you tell our listeners about Birdwatcher?
Absolutely. We are the Baltimore Orioles affiliate for FanSided. So any Baltimore Orioles content you need, come to us. We got a lot of great contributors who have recently joined the team. got a lot of areas to cover. You can get major league analysis. We had some really good draft recaps. So we're a one-stop shop for all Orioles content. So I definitely recommend it if you're into that.
Bet. Hey, Will, now go with your question.
All right. Thank you. Josh, help us make sense out of what the hell went on with the Orioles or at the trade deadline, because this is a team that's 52-51, right? Exceeded everyone's expectations, but you traded away a guy who, for the most part, has been kind of a stalwart through the tough times. I'm referring to Trey Mancini, who came back last year and was the comeback player of the year. Just help us make sense of everything.
Sure. So the Mancini trade was always going to be a polarizing one, given what you said. He has been, and I wrote about this yesterday, basically the last remaining connection between the last time the Orioles were good to now, which was 2016. He came up in that September call-up period in 2016 and actually hit, I believe it was 3 home runs during the last 2 weeks of the season and helped the Orioles clinch a wild card berth, but he didn't make the postseason roster. And then he's entrenched himself in the community with so many different charitable works. I know he took over Adam Jones' tailgate at the Ravens game.
Oh, wow.
You know, and then obviously everything that he's gone through in his personal life with the cancer battle in the last, you know, few years. Everybody in, you know, Orioles fandom is familiar with Mo Gabba, who was a young kid who would always used to call into Baltimore sports radio, ingrained himself with the team. Trey had a great relationship with him. So there's just a lot of emotional connection there that makes it hard to process. Now on a baseball note, I can see why the Orioles did it. Mike Elias has been pretty clear since he took over what the plan was, and pretty much everything he's done has been in accordance with what he envisions long-term. And Mancini was going to be a free agent coming up. And his offense it's not enough for a primary designated hitter, I would argue, on a competitive team. So from that standpoint, you know, I can see wanting to get the value back. The Lopez trade, well, I guess we'll get into that. I was actually a little more befuddled by that than the Mancini trade, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we'll get into the Lopez trade, but can you tell our listeners about some of the prospects they got in return?
Absolutely. So as far as the Trey Mancini trade, they got it was a three-team deal. The Rays got in there at the last second. We got a right-hand pitcher, Chase McDermott, from the Houston system. He was in their high A, mid-90s fastball with a good curveball. I've seen some limited video of him. The slider looks okay, kind of flat. Had a 5.50 ERA in high A, but he had a ridiculous strikeout rate. He was over 14 strikeouts for 9 innings, and it seems pretty clear that Elias has a type when it comes to pitchers. He loves guys with high strikeout rates, and even if they have other flaws, which McDermott has a walk rate over 5 per 9 innings, which is a bit of an issue, but they seem to be confident in their ability to mold those guys. He was the Astros' 12th ranked prospect before the trade. And then from the Rays, they got Seth Johnson, who was another right-handed pitcher who's very intriguing. He was the number 8 prospect in their system, which was ranked 2nd in Major League Baseball behind the Orioles prior to yesterday. He was the 40th overall pick in 2019, had a career 2.81 ERA in 137 and two-thirds minor league innings with 172 strikeouts. So another guy who strikes out more than one per inning. High 90s fastball, absolute hammer of a curveball. Slider looked good. However, he is just about to undergo Tommy John surgery.
Oh, wow.
So there is an added risk, obviously, even with the advancement of medicine and, you know, the increased success rate from Tommy John, but he's going to be out for a year. He's also Rule 5 eligible, so he'll have to be protected going into this offseason. But the upside is there. And in terms of what you can expect from, like I said, a primary designated hitter who's a free agent, they couldn't have really expected to get more, I would argue. I think it was a shrewd piece of business, strictly from a baseball perspective for Mancini.
So Josh, you know, Mancini's gone. Who gets those at-bats for this team?
Sure. I think, well, a lot of people assumed it would be Kyle Stowers, who is a top 10 Orioles prospect. He's in AAA, but he is still currently in AAA. And then they just acquired Brett Phillips from Tampa, who was designated for assignment. So I think he's a candidate to get some of those at-bats. I think the DH spot will be used a lot more to give guys rest. So you can see, I think you'll see a lot more of Adley Rutschman there. Ryan Mountcastle, Santander, obviously. Stowers, I think he will get called. We'll get some at-bats there. And Yusniel Diaz just got called up to replace Mancini on the roster, so he could be a candidate as well.
Okay. So, all right, so you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media at empiremedia.com right now. We're wrapping with Josh Lynn from Birds Watcher.
All right, Josh. Early, the Orioles also traded closer Jorge Lopez to the Minnesota Twins. WTF, what happened there, and what did the Orioles get in return for him? I know that they got four young pitching prospects, which could you give the fans a little bit more information about those prospects, if you have any?
Sure. Sure, man. I swear, I would imagine the last 2 days, Mike Elias in the front office, I imagine he was a lot like Shawn Michaels against Ric Flair at WrestleMania, like, before he super kicked him. Just kind of like, I'm sorry, I love you.
I like that.
Rip the Band-Aid off. But anyway, so for the return, yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, given he was just an all-star. He's been a dominant closer. Had to make it. You could tell he had the makings of a closer if you watched him as a starter last year. Uh-huh. So, and I honestly thought, you know, we're pretty close to our competitive window. I think this year is showing that pretty clearly. Uh-huh. So, and I thought he could have been an asset for future competitive teams. So, yeah, it doesn't make sense, but at the same time, you could, if you're the Orioles front office, the entire bullpen is made up largely of waiver claims or reclamation projects from other systems. Uh-huh. So they're probably feeling really confident that they can find some other guys and turn them into similar relievers. Uh-huh. So, go ahead.
No, Josh, you mentioned something about this front office's confidence in being able to mold, you know, the younger prospects that they're getting in the Mancini trade, and then also yep. mold the arms that they have in the bullpen currently, yes. or that will be migrating through their system. Just from your perspective, you know, the fan perspective, do you think that this overconfidence is deserved, or do you think it's a little bit premature?
So when it comes to bullpen arms, I think it's justified. If you look, this bullpen has been a top two or three bullpen in Major League Baseball this year. And like I said, it's guys, you know, Felix Bautista bounced around several organizations before he ended up in Baltimore. Lopez did the same. Cionel Perez was a waiver claim. Brian Baker was a waiver claim. Dylan Tate was I think he was the fourth overall pick in his draft class, but his star had faded and he was a bit of a, you know, reclamation project to a degree. They've also had shown an aptitude of helping develop starters. Like Kyle Bradish has become a completely different prospect since he's come over from the Angels. So I think it's justified. And that track record, you could also argue, goes back to their days in Houston as well.
Also, Josh, can you tell us about some of the prospects they did receive, though, from who they received, who they get them from?
From Minnesota.
Twins,
Minnesota.
The Twins.
Minnesota
Twins.
Twins.
The Twins.
Yeah. Yeah, I went on a tangent there.
No, you're good, Josh, you're good. We'll ask a good question. You went off of that. No, you're good.
All good. So the headliner appears to be Cade Povich, who no relation to Maury that I'm aware.
Oh God, you're the father.
He's a yeah. The results are in. He's a lefty, 22 years old. It was also another guy pitching at high A. Fangraphs has slotted him in as the number 19 prospect for the Orioles. But again, you have to consider we have a really deep farm system, so that's not as mids, for the lack of a better term, as another team. He has a 4.46 ERA, but his fielding independent pitching, which basically just calculates what a pitcher's ERA would be if they play behind an average defense is 340. And another strikeout guy, 31.8% of the batters he's faced this year have been retired via strikeout, but doesn't have the velocity you'd expect. He sits in the low 90s, but his curve and slider, from what I've seen, are legit major league pitches. They are very, very good. I've heard good things about his changeup as well. So given that profile, if everything turns out, he could end up being a number four, number five starting pitcher. Forgive me for if I butcher his first name. Henier Cano is a 28-year-old reliever who pitched for the Twins this year, 13 and two-thirds innings, but had really big problems controlling the ball. Had 11 walks in 13.2 innings. I believe his ERA is over 9, but he had a 3.07 career ERA in the minors, and again, another guy who strikes out more than one per inning. The other two arms they got were summer league prospects, so we don't really have a lot of data on them yet, but just two more projectable arms in a player development system that, again, is really confident that they can make the best out of everybody they get.
So do you think they you know, did well in that trade? Like, still knowing that Lopez, I believe this is last year in his deal anyway, or he was going through arbitration, one or the other. So do you think that, like, this is like a steal in terms of the move that, you know, Elias made?
I wouldn't consider it a steal. I think this is one. It seems that they're high on Povich, and he may be kind of a rising stock guy. So I think this is a deal that's going to be better judged in a year or two from now. Mm-hmm. And my initial reaction is kind of, yeah, like you said, WTF. Yeah. he easily could have helped us in the next 2 or 3 years. And I believe he's under team control until 2025 or 2026.
I think it's arbitration.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's right. I think it's arbitration. Yeah. Yeah. He's going to get paid a lot of money due to the fact that this season. Yeah.
So this is the first time I've kind of questioned a move that Elias has made. But from what I've seen of Povich and looking at his stats, he's definitely an intriguing option, but just going to have to wait and see how he develops.
So who do you think, who slides into the role as a closer?
I think it's going to be Felix Bautista. Okay. He got a little bit of a taste when Lopez struggled, funnily enough, against the Twins in early July. He blew, I believe it was 3 straight saves, 2 to the Twins.
Yeah.
Just an absolute mountain of a human being. Throws 99 to 101 with a splitter that looks like it got cooked up in a lab somewhere. It's just ridiculously freaky, man. Like, it's just watching him pitch is so much fun. And he has control of both of the pitches. Has been dominant. I gave up a home run to Brandon Drury the other day against Cincinnati, but he's the clear option, I would say, to take over the role. Dylan Tate has been a really good reliever for us as well. I believe his sinker is one of the most, in terms of outs above average, was one of the very best individual pitches in Major League Baseball. But I think so. He could be another option, but Bautista, I would assume, is going to get first crack.
And real quick too, also before Will goes, Will, I do have one more question. For me, the only reason why I can, like, I'm with you. I thought, like, wow, like Lopez was like dominant this season as a closer, but Bautista is the reason why I was thinking, like, because I've seen Bautista pitch, and I'm like, oh, he just looks the part. Like, if you're going to trade Lopez, I know I was speaking to somebody like a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about Lopez could be traded, but it probably wouldn't be this season. We're talking about, like, the next couple of seasons. But it was because of Bautista, because of how dominant his stuff is. Like, I think that because you have Bautista, it allows you to kind of think about trading Lopez. That was just my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And just the overall depth of the bullpen as well is another reason why I think they might have been able to make that deal without too much pain. Mm-hmm. But it just, to see, you know, what a revelation he's been so far, making the All-Star team. Another guy with a great backstory that it was very, very well liked in the clubhouse. Was a little tough, but, you know, that's trade deadline is where fandom and your analytical brain don't mix very well.
Facts. Facts. Will?
All right, Josh. Got two questions. questions for you. Here's the first one. Can I interest you in an outfielder who struck out 85 times out of 184 at-bats, who's hitting 147 with 5 home runs and 14 RBIs in 75 games this year?
Who is that?
That would be Brett Phillips. That would be Brett Phillips, the outfielder that you guys acquired.
Yeah. He hits well against the Orioles.
Yeah.
Though. He hits well against the Orioles, though.
He does. And he's got a great laugh.
All right. And the second question. No, go ahead. If you have some more information about him.
Short answer, no. It was confusing. I thought that it was the precursor to, like, maybe Santander was getting traded, but to me, he's just, like, Ryan McKenna's the same player. He's Phillips is a great outfielder defensively and with very little bat, but so is McKenna. So it's just, to have two players like that, and again, I don't think Phillips is a guy that is going to be a postseason roster candidate, so yeah, YOLO, I guess, but
I like Diaz. So I've been a Diaz supporter for a while. So I'm probably the minority though.
No, I would love to see him come good, especially given that he was the headliner of the Machado trade.
Exactly, that's why.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and he's had a lot of issues with injuries, so it would be nice to see him strike some, major league games together without getting hurt and able to produce.
I know, he's been gassed up for so long about how he was such a prized jewel in the Dodgers organization. Wow.
He was a top, I think, 60 prospect at the time.
Yes, he was. I know. I've been waiting since that trade.
Man, you want to talk about a trade that screwed with my emotions. That was bad. That was a bad day when we traded Manny.
It was a terrible day. I'm still not over it. Hey, I'm sorry, Will. Go ahead.
All right. Now, taking everything that we talked about and considering where the Orioles are, 52 and 51, they're in the wild card race, the AL wild card race. Are you surprised with the moves that they made over the past 5 days?
So, when looking at them as a whole, no, because Elias has preached about what his vision for the team is and how everything is a long play. And I think if you gave him truth serum, he would tell you that he is absolutely stunned by what's happening this year. So I guess in a way he deserves credit for not letting this make him, do any impulse moves or mortgaging any talent for a guy, players who may walk via free agency or may not be worth the price. But we're no worse off for the future after these trades. It's just kind of takes a little bit of the wind out of the sails when we have the first fun team that the Orioles have had since 2016. And then, to trade Mancini and Lopez. But looking at it from 30,000 feet, it's, understandable. And the farm system is the best in baseball. We still have a ton of good young players who are due to come up. So I wouldn't call it a success, but it just kind of business as usual for Elias and company.
Well, hey, Josh, it's been, you've been dope, my man. Thanks for being on the show. Before we let you go, could you tell our listeners how they can find you and Birds Watcher on social media?
Absolutely. So you can find me on Twitter at JJLinJJ, that's LINN. And then you can follow Birds Watcher on Twitter at BirdsWatcherFS.
Hey, Josh, we're going to have
you back
on, man. All right,
Josh, we greatly appreciate you, man.
Definitely. We're going to have you back on, man. I'm the Orioles fan, so I'm definitely going to have you back on. So I'm going to let you know.
Absolutely. I'm glad we can make this happen.
I know. It's probably going to be when Will and Ray are out because they like Nat stuff. So I don't like to, bombard them with Nat stuff because it's not fair. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's all good, man.
Yeah.
It's not that it's not fair. It's, it's all good,
You're going through a lot right now. It's okay.
I know. I won't be talking about this team being competitive for at least 3 years.
Oh, the Nats?
Minimum.
That's true.
Three years.
So, actually, I can have the show talk about the Orioles because since we are, competitive at the moment. Like, at the moment, we're competitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Josh, you'll be back on.
But yeah.
So, you will be back
absolutely,
on.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, Josh, thanks again, my man.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the candy gore. Yeah, appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, thanks, man.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Again, make sure you follow Josh on Twitter at JJ Lynn. That's LINN JJ. Again, at JJ Lynn. That's LINN JJ. And Birds Watchers, that's at Bird. I mean, Birds Watcher. That's at Birds Watcher. That's at BIRDSWATCHERFS. All right.
Earlier today. Yep. Earlier today, the Nats traded Juan Soto to the San Diego Padres along with Josh Bell. We'll talk Nats with Kevin Nibley. We'll jump on the show to discuss this trade after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
About Aegis.
You dig?
Deuces.
On Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
You know it's all about the
listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Ole, and the homie, Will T. We're still waiting on our guests, you know what I'm saying? But Will T, let's wrap up a little bit, you know what I'm saying? And for the, and also for listeners out there, I do want to, you know, y'all heard my Adam Cole thing, like, back to back. I like that song. I watch wrestling, so I like his introduction. So I like to play that for the show.
Talking about wrestling, man, we haven't had a chance to talk about the genetic jackhammer stepping down.
Oh, I know, right? Chris McMahon, dude.
Yeah.
Man, obviously the stuff that was out there was damning. You know what I mean? It was terrible stuff. But, I mean, if you watch the product, I felt like it was needed. I felt like Vince McMahon got stale. You know, it's hard to say that for a guy who kind of started the whole wrestling business in terms of making as popular as it is today. I know a lot of people don't want to give him his flowers, but you just got to feel
it.
You got to be a realist. Like, wrestling would have never been as popular without Vince McMahon. You know what I'm saying? At any point, what he did.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, yeah, what he did was wrong. But in terms of the business of wrestling, yeah, you can give somebody their flowers in terms of what they've done for the business of wrestling. Like, he made wrestling popular. He brought it to pop culture with, you know, look at the mid-90s, man. Like, early, when Hulk Hogan, even early, like, late in the 80s. To the mid 90s of what you got with Stone Cold and The Rock and the DX, you know what I mean? So he's an icon in terms of the pro wrestling. Now, in terms of what he's done in terms of the you know with the sexual allegations and whatnot, that's what it is, you know what I mean? So, but in terms of we talking about wrestling, yeah, he's an icon.
And no, I to be honest with you, I thought it was a stunt.
Oh, did you know, really?
Like, I used to watch wrestling. Yeah, I used to watch wrestling when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like, I remember one time that there was a stunt where, like, there was a car that was blown up with him in it. And then the following week he came out, right? Like,
yeah.
So I thought this was like a stunt, and he would, you know, come out or emerge. But we can talk more about this later.
Yeah, later.
Because I know that our guest just joined us.
Yeah, so let me introduce you.
Kevin, how's it going, man?
Hey, y'all. How's it going?
Good, good. Let me introduce you properly, though, all Kevin. Right. We have Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats on the line. Kevin, we'll always say what's good, but yeah, we're glad to have you on, my man.
Yeah, thanks as always for having me, guys.
All right, man, let's get right into it, man. It's a sad day for Nationals fans. They traded the young superstar, a once-in-a-lifetime supernova talent, potentially, Juan Soto, and first baseman, who should have been an all-star this year, Josh Bell, to the San Diego Padres. First off, who did the Nats receive in this trade?
Sad day, but hopefully a day that can be a silver lining in a few years, because the Nats did receive some good young players. They got C.J. Abrams, who is a shortstop, left-handed hitting shortstop. He was a top-10 prospect coming into the season, and he's got elite speed. So if everything works out, that could, in theory, be your Trey Turner replacement, you know, someone who could hit leadoff, steal a bunch of bases, hopefully got to develop power like Trey did as he gets further into his major league career. They also got Mackenzie Gore, who's a left-handed starting pitcher. He was doing great.
I know. I had him on my fantasy
June.
Team. I had him on my fantasy team. He's yeah. Me too. Yep. Another one. Never mind. Continue.
the question mark with him, he had a little bit of an elbow issue that came up. But I guess, you know, the Nats were comfortable with his medicals. They looked at it. He seems okay, you know, in terms of like not having a major injury. You know, the theory, I think Mike Rizzo said this today during his press conference, is that maybe he hit a wall. You know, the season he had worked that many innings. But, you know, I mean, if you look at him in June, I think, you know, he had an ERA of 1.5. So that's potentially a pretty good starting rotation piece. They got Robert Hassel, who's the Padres' number one prospect in the minors. Another lefty outfielder. He'll either play center. He'll probably start off in center field when he first comes up, and then, you know, we'll see if he could play center, if they'll move him to a corner. But, you know, some scouts thought he had like one of the best hit tools in the 2020 draft. So that's a pretty big prospect they got back. He, you know, him and Abrams and Gore would headline the deal. And then they got James Wood. He's farther away. The first three guys I mentioned, they'll, you know, Gore and Abrams will be up right away, or, you know, Gore when he's healthy. Hassel probably at some point next season. Woods only an A-ball, but he's a lefty, kind of like a Aaron Judge frame. He's 6'7", 240 pounds, really elite power tool, and really elite speed tool. So he's not unlike, you know, Green, who the Nats just drafted, where, you know, if he hits, you know, he could be an outfield bat, you know, like 30-30 kind of guy. And then the more interesting prospect, they got a guy by the name of Yarlin Susanna, who is an 18-year-old Dominican. Mike Rizzo brought him up in the press conference today. He really loves him. He's only, you know, he's not even in the minor leagues yet. But what he has done so far, Rizzo's really impressed with him. He's 6'6", power pitcher. And Rizzo said he wanted him so badly that that's what made him include Josh Bell in the deal, that the Padres wouldn't have given them Susanna without Josh Bell being in the deal. And then Luke Voit, who some of you remember, he was on the Yankees. He hit like 20 home runs during the COVID season. Not a bad, you know, the Nats will control him for two more seasons after this. So not a bad little throw in. Originally, when the trade came out, it was reported Eric Hosmer is going to be coming to the Nats.
I guess Hosmer.
Yeah.
He declined it, right?
That's what I thought also.
Yeah. So it ended up becoming Luke Voit. Yeah, he declined it. I guess he didn't want to go to a rebuilding team. He ended up going to Boston. So Luke Voit came back instead. But those are the players, you know, five prospects and Luke Voit. You know, for Soto and Bell, I don't think it's that bad of a haul, to be honest. I know a lot of fans do. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if the Nats are in the playoffs and 2 years, then, you know, all will be forgiven. And don't forget, they still have that $440 million Juan Soto didn't want. I'm sure they can find some other free agents that might want to take it.
I like how you threw that in. All right,
Kev, let me ask you this. So let's, just looking back on this team from 3 years ago, right? This is a team that had Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, Matt Scherzer, and Anthony Rendon. So those are five guys who you probably would say during from 2016 through possibly through 2019, these guys were some of the top players, not only in their position, but in the league. This team has been totally stripped down, right? But what is the message that the management and ownership is sending to the fan base?
I mean, right now it's a tough message. You know, there's no, you know, this team isn't, obviously they've been horrible this year. They were horrible last year after, you know, the deadline when they traded Scherzer and Trey. I don't have it right in front of me. I think someone tweeted this in the last day or so. It's like since last year's trade deadline, you know, the Nats have been like 50 and 110 or just something remarkably bad since the teardown where they moved out Trey and Max and Schwarber and all these guys. You know, the message they're sending a fan, it's a tough message, you know, but it's a rebuild and it's a scorched earth rebuild. And while it's not fun to be a fan of a team going through that, you know, when you look though historically at what's worked in terms of building big, long windows, what the Nats are doing works. It's what the Nats did the first time. You know, 2009, they were awful. 2010, they were bad. 2011, they started to get better. And obviously, everyone remembers 2012, where they turned a corner and, you know, they had a great run for almost a decade. The Houston Astros, the Chicago Cubs. These are all teams that really tanked for a while. And then, you know, through that tanking, through making trades, your combination of draft picks and bringing back prospects from other teams and trades, they were able to open up these big, long windows. So I do think ultimately that's what Mike Rizzo is trying to do here. There's really no message you can give to, especially to the casual fan. It's one thing if you're, you know, someone who goes to talk Nats, you're a hardcore baseball fan, you know about these prospects. You know, those kind of fans are actually probably a little happy today. But the casual baseball fan, there's nothing to tell them. I mean, obviously, you know, you've traded away all of the faces of the franchise. And, you know, and it is one of those things when you come to Nats Park and you look at those giant posters by the parking garage, you know, I don't know who they're going to put on those right away. You know, I mean, it's a total tear down, but, you know, it should bear some fruit before too long.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. With a possible change in ownership, from the outside looking in, it looks a little bit similar to kind of what Jeffrey Loria did in Florida in Miami with the Marlins, to kind of what the Learners are doing with this team, right? You win a World Series, then you tear down, deconstruct the roster, and then, you know, you sell. I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment, or you think that's a little bit off, or my perspective off?
I think you could say that, and I have heard some people say that. One of my buddies sent me a text this morning saying that he was sorry, and it was like, quote unquote, watching the Marlins in slow motion. You know, he's saying like that the Nats did in 2 years, what, you know, or 3 years, what the Marlins did in, you know, just one off season. But the way I looked at it, I'm not quite that hard on it. I think what happened is Strasburg. You know, you look at it, the things that happened was they win the World Series. You know, they have to decide to either sign Strasburg or Rendon to a huge contract. Okay. And they choose Strasburg. You know, he was the World Series MVP. That made some sense. You know, looking back now, both those deals were horrible. You know, the correct move would have been to let both of them go. You know, but they didn't. They picked one. They picked Strasburg, and he's been hurt. And I think, you know, it's not a coincidence that last trade deadline, right before, was when the Nats found out that you know, Strasburg had that like TOS thing with his shoulder, like a really serious injury. He may never be the same pitcher again. Once that happened, the wheels for all this went in motion. I don't think if Strasburg had just had a normal injury and it wasn't potentially a career altering injury, then I don't think they probably go so hard moving Trey and Max and then this year Soto. You know, I think at that point they realized, you know, we owe Strasburg a ton of money. He may never pitch again. And then also Patrick Corbin turned into a pumpkin and it's been horrible and they still owe him money. So I think when they had, you know, they're paying almost $60 million a year to one pitcher who doesn't pitch and then another pitcher who does pitch but is one of the worst starters in the league, kind of once that materialized last year, and that situation unfortunately hasn't changed this year, they really didn't have a choice but to tear it down and rebuild. And that's the way I look at it. But I get that a casual fan and that most fans are going to be really angry and that there is going to be a price to pay in terms of, I mean, attendance hasn't been great anyway, but there's going to be even more of a price to pay. And I also do think that the new ownership, I could see the new ownership wanting the Learners to take care of this before the new ownership comes in. So the new ownership could probably come in this offseason and quote unquote, be the good guy, maybe sign a few free agents and get people into it again. So I don't think it's exactly what Jeffrey Loria did down in Miami, where he just gutted a World Series team just to save a few bucks. I don't see it quite that way.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, because you brought up two very interesting names and you kind of took, I wanted to take the conversation in that direction. Strasburg, Steven Strasburg and Patrick Corbin. With those two guys and the amount of money that, and the years that are on their contract, does this kind of delay the rebuilding process because you have that much payroll allocated to two guys who are, let's just be honest, extremely ineffective right now?
So my answer to that question would be actually, if they re-signed Juan Soto, let's say to some $40 million a year, 10-year deal, let's say they gave him $400 million for 10 years, and then you also had $60 million going to Strasburg and Corbin, then yeah, that would probably delay the rebuilding process for about 2 to 3 years because you own, or I think they have Corbin on the books for two more years. Strasburg, unfortunately, I believe is three more or four more years after this. So they're going to owe Strasburg for a while. But with what they just did with Soto and Bell, and they also have Will Harris coming off, after this season, who never even really pitched. I think he might have pitched one game or two in 2020, but he's barely even pitched for Nats. You know, between those three guys, you know, that's close to $40 million, give or take, coming off the books. You know, basically their payroll is pretty clear. I mean, yes, they owe Corbin for two more years, and yes, they owe Strasburg, but that's $60 million, and they're not spending any money anywhere else, really, other than guys on league minimum deals. So they, if they did decide to spend, I think they would have the room, and you know, to spend next year, and then really 2024 to me would seem like when this team would be ready to start taking off. So I do think the move they did today actually helps them in the future in terms of their payroll and having a lot of flexibility to go out and get someone.
So right. Oh, you got it, Will? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com. Right now, we have Nats Talk, Kevin Nibley on the line.
So, yeah.
Let me ask you.
Oh, go, Will. Go, Will. Go, go.
I was going to ask you one more question. This is regarding Soto and his legacy in D.C. You know, we know that he was one of the guys who helped power this team towards that 2019 World Series championship, and then we know during the COVID abbreviated season, you know, he had a great season. What do you think his legacy will be as a Nat? Do you think he'll be loved, or you think he'll be hated in this town?
I think he'll be loved. You know, if it was New York or maybe Boston or some other kind of, maybe Philly for sure, right? Like maybe a little bit of a rougher place in terms of how the fans are. I think they'd probably boo him. You know, for me, I mean, I'm a Nats fan more than anything. You know, I could never boo the guy. I mean, he straight up won you a World Series. I mean, he hit a home run off of, the Nats had never been past the division series, and they're about to lose to LA, and Clayton Kershaw's coming out, like, about to save the game. And he just takes, he's 20 years old at the time, and just takes Clayton Kershaw about like 430 feet, and, you know, and changes the whole Nats, you know, narrative. The Brewers game before that, you know, Nats are about to lose to the Brewers, and he has that hit off of Josh Hader, you know, and they get over that hump, and then a team really takes off. He's a great player, great clutch player. I mean, I would just say if you're a Nats fan, to make yourself feel better, I mean, the Nats didn't break up with Juan Soto. Juan Soto and Scott Boras broke up with the Nats. I mean, the Nats offered him $440 million, and they didn't even make a counteroffer. So I just think he wanted to go, you know, to free agency, want to test the market. He's going to want, you know, 10, 15 teams all bidding for him, and he's going to want to set the salary record, you know, which he probably will if he stays healthy, in two off seasons, and where the Nats were as a franchise, they couldn't do that. And that's just the business of baseball. But I don't think that affects his legacy. I mean, he brought the Nats a title, and who knows, maybe if the Nats get a deep-pocketed owner, and in 2 years, I mean, if you watch the score right now, they're beating Jacob DeGrom 4-1. These kids are hitting home runs.
Are they really? He was just throwing 102.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Are they really? Maybe, he was just throwing 102 miles per hour. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe in two years, when some of these kids are up looking good, you know, deep-pocketed owner says, "Hey, Juan, like, here's, you know, $600 million when I come back." I don't know. You know, I don't think he'll have a dark legacy in D.C. at all. I mean, he won a title. And you know, and as we all know, as D.C. sports fans, there haven't been a lot of titles. You know, so, you know, anyone from the 2019 Nats or, you know, the Caps. 2018 Caps, it's really hard to – it's hard to hate. You know, it's hard to hate them, you know. So, yeah.
So do you think that – so, Kev, do you think that Davey Martinez is the guy to kind of lead this new young crop? I think that's the question. All this talk about, well, it's, I hear all this talk. I hear all this talk about how it's okay because they lost this player, they lost that player, but they weren't producing with this manager. So I'm saying now he has a young crop. Like, he has guys to mold. Is he the manager to lead this team, this new generation of Nats players, to the promised land?
I love how every time I come on, you work in like a JV Martinez.
Darn right I will. I'm consistent. You know why, Kev? Because I'm consistent. I'm consistent.
You are. I wouldn't blame, if a new owner comes in, I wouldn't blame a new owner for wanting to start fresh, you know? So I would say that both Mike Rizzo and JV Martinez's jobs aren't exactly 100% safe.
Thank you. That's all I'm saying. Well, Rizzo, I don't think is that bad. I don't have anything against Rizzo. Personally, I don't.
Oh, sorry. I had to think of myself for a second. Rizzo just made such a franchise-altering move, though. I would think that maybe a new owner is intending on keeping him for a while. I would hope if they weren't intending on keeping him, they wouldn't have let him make this trade. In terms of Davey, I don't know. It's really hard to judge him. Obviously, 2019, he did great in terms of the postseason. Uh-huh. And, you know, he obviously hasn't probably done that great in other years. So, you know, to me, though, this team will be on its third last place finish. Uh-huh. It's hard to keep a manager for like a fourth last place finish, right? You know, so I don't know. My personal opinion, I could see a change there. But is it something I feel passionate about right now? No. I think I'd like to give him the chance and see what he does with a new group of players. But if there was a change, it wouldn't shock me.
Will, do you, you're a Nets fan. Are you for keeping Davey? You know what I mean? With this new crop of young, influential individuals?
I mean, yeah, I'm for, you know, I mean, for now, yes. I don't think you'd make any drastic changes right now, especially this late in the season. But, yeah, I think, you know, he's been given an extension for 2023. I fully expect for the Nationals to honor that contract and him to be the manager for 2023 and start to get this young crop of new Nets up and going. Now, if we get halfway, you know, if we get halfway through July, not even July, I mean, if we get through the middle of June next year and, you know, we aren't seeing progress from these guys who are, who kind of been anointed, you know, some of the next stars in baseball and definitely the top of the Nets farm system, I think Davey will be gone.
Wow. It's wild. Like, you know, so four losing seasons and it has to take a half a season for him to be gone. You know, that's just crazy. Like, I mean, one World Series, just, you know, Barry Switzer won the Super Bowl, so I guess it is what it is. Hey, Kev, before I let you go, yeah, man, what do you have featured on TalkNets.com, and how can folks catch you on social media?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks as always. I did want to say real quick.
Oh, say it. Go ahead, Kev. We got time. Go ahead.
Just for all the people that are depressed, Keith Law and The Athletic did write that this was the biggest prospect call he's ever seen in his life. Yeah. So that's just like something to hope on. TalkNats. Just TalkNats.com. Twitter @TalkNats. Obviously, we're going to have featured information on all these prospects. Before I came on tonight, I mean, I definitely know some of them, but like, yeah, Susanna, I had to look up, you know. We'll have all of that. But it's going to be fun. It's like a good young team. No more BS. We're not going to have to talk about, you know, Scott Boras speak and whether Juan Soto should get $3,000 billion and all that. Yeah. That's all done. We're going to have a bunch of young players, and we're also going to have these players for a while, like 5, 6, 7 years. So, there's going to be a lot to learn there. So just follow TalkNats. And then I'm just @K_Nibley on Twitter. I'm sure I'll be tweeting about all this in the coming days for sure. And thanks as always for having you guys.
No problem. No,
thank you for accepting the invite to come on and talk baseball with us today, man.
Always, man.
Always a pleasure.
I do want to read a comment from our friend George. He says, "This is one of the worst days in DC sports history, a day that will live in infamy." Infamy. Yes. So, yeah, George, I feel you, man.
Why do I get the feeling that you were smiling while you were reading?
No, I like Juan Soto. I wanted Juan Soto to stay. No, don't get it twisted. Like, no, I like Juan Soto. I wanted him to stay. I actually did. Soto's one of my favorite Nats players, period. You know what I mean? I thought he would stay, to be honest with you. But it is what it is, man. Money. You know what I mean? Money talks. Scott Boras, once he has a number, he wants it. You know what I mean? And but I will say this for Nats fans, to what Kev was talking about. The Padres have one of the best farm systems in baseball, and you actually got a bunch of prospects from that system. So, you know, I mean, you can hit. I mean, I think I like what Mike Rizzo did. I mean, you're not going to get fair compensation like a player for player, but you know, you never know. But go ahead, go, Kev.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I do think, just to make you feel better, Nats fans, last year before the deadline, the Nats farm system was 29th or 30th or somewhere like way at the end. And I think after his trade today, it's back in the top 10. So they're doing what they need to be doing, you know. And I do think, again, they will have a lot of money. So, you know, you got a shortstop and Abrams, second baseman and Garcia, catcher and Ruiz. Those are three hard things to do. And then you have about like four pretty good outfield prospects between the guys they got today and then Green, who they just drafted. So it's not all, you know, you have Brady House, you know, could come up at some point, their number one pick last year. So it's not all dire. I think, you know, today's a bad day, but I think in a couple of years, when they have a big long window and plenty of money to supplement in free agency, it'll Nats fan will feel a little bit better.
Also, Will, yep. George also added that Will knows Wole very well. That's what George said. In terms of you saying that, I may be laughing while talking, having a smile on my face. I have a slight smile, but it's not like an evil smile or anything. I have a slight smile, but nothing disrespectful to Nats fans. I love Nats fans. You know what I'm saying? They won a World Series. My team hasn't won a World Series since I've been born. So I can't talk any crap. Who am I to talk? You know what I'm saying?
Touche.
You know, yep. Real talk, man. I'm just being real.
So now we got Victor Robles, Luis Garcia, and Cara Kiboom to look forward to.
Yo, I mean, y'all keep talking dirty about my man Robles, man. I love Robles. Hopefully, like, this puts pressure.
I love Robles.
Hopefully, this puts pressure on Robles to step up.
I love Robles.
Though. Real talk. Hopefully, this puts pressure on
him.
Yeah,
the pressure is on him to step up. And, you know, everyone, you know, when he was being scouted, we, you know, everyone said we had this five-tool future star in Victor Robles. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, now the outfield is his. The team is his.
For real.
You know, looking at from a talent perspective. So, you know, we'll see what he's able to do, but Luis Garcia is starting to, you know, turn it on, play a little bit better.
And he can hit too. He can hit.
Yeah.
He can hit. You know what I'm saying? So, but Kev, man, thanks for being on. Appreciate you. We'll have you on again, all right?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, absolutely, guys. Yeah. Have a good night, man.
Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Appreciate you, Kev.
All right. So, let me read this tweet also on Twitter. It was about the Orioles, actually. It said about tanking. Wouldn't say tanking. Mancini hurts, but was a smart move holding up spots for young guys coming up, Stowers in particular, which Josh referenced. Lopez was a smart sell high move. They basically created this. I mean, his value was a journeyman struggling starter. I think they think they can recreate that role. Yeah, I think Batista could take that role. So it is what it is. But yeah, man, this has been a dope show. Appreciate Kevin being on.
It is.
Everybody.
I appreciate Josh and I appreciate Kevin. Everybody, both of those guys helped me. You know, they gave me a lot of information. Kev helped me, you know, come off the ledge, you know, about this team, even though, as a Nets fan, yeah, even though it's going to be hard to watch this team. Maybe this team is, you know,
maybe
a young team.
Yeah. Real talk. Maybe if with some managing, this team can do some surprise some folks. You know what I mean? Like, they have talent.
There you go, throwing in the managing.
I feel like, you know, man,
I know you being
I know, I'm being an asshole. It's true. I am. I'm going to keep it a buck.
Yes,
like,
you are.
With the manager thing, yes, this is a fact. No one's lying about that. I'm just saying,
I know you're
like,
being facetious with the manager. Talking about the manager.
I think this team could be much better if the manager was better. To be honest, I don't think they'd blow everything up if the manager was better. I think they would be competitive. But that's just me, though. Like, but he's a nice guy, so I mean, everybody wants to go with that thing. He's a nice guy, though. He is a nice guy, but sometimes, like, hey, Like four last place finishes with this team. Not this year. I'm not gonna count this year because this year, like we all, this team is not that talented. But some of them last place finishes. This team was not last place talented. They were beyond last place. So it's something to think about, knowing that you're gonna have a bunch of young guys, with this manager. You know what I mean? Like they're gonna need top tier managing to be. Competitive. So if you're not competitive with, say, guys that are high end talent, then that could be a serious problem.
That's fair. That's a very, as Ray says, I say that's fair too much, but that's the right statement to have. That's a great point. That's a great point to make. When you have a young team that you think. You know, when you have young prospects, you want a guy who will be able to come in and create an atmosphere within that clubhouse and within that dugout to make those guys say, all right, we need you to produce, but we're not going to put a amount of pressure on you
which
would make you fold, and we'll give you the opportunity to learn and make your mistakes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, people always make, you know, they always say that I mention this dude a lot, but, yo, there's a reason why Dusty Baker gets young players the ball, man. There's a reason. There's a reason, man. Michael A. Taylor.
But on the flip.
Helped that kid out.
No, go ahead.
He helped Michael A. Taylor get confidence. So, I'm just telling you, like, there's a reason
why. He really did.
There's a reason why people like Dusty are good managers. But go ahead, Will. What you about to say?
But on the flip side, though, man, how exciting is it going to be to watch the Padres? I know baseball is.
No, I thought about this, Will. Will, I thought about this, bro. I thought about that, dog. The Padres are stacked. Like for the next couple years,
you're gonna have you're gonna have Soto probably batting two, Tatis batting three, and Manny Machado batting four.
Golly, bro! Like,
it's gonna be exciting to watch that.
Like, and talking about. If you can't win with that lineup, bro, if you still like, man, I know the Dodgers stacked, the Dodgers stay stacked, but if you ain't competing with the Dodgers, I'm talking about bad managing. I'm sorry, that's bad managing. Like that team, you have Machado, Soto, and Tatis come back next. Let's talk about next year. Like you're gonna have all those dudes on your roster. If you're not competing for the World Series, then you're not doing a great job. You better make the postseason at least. At least make the postseason.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So
You should be contending for the NL contended. West.
You should be. You know, I get that the Nets, I mean, the Dodgers are stacked, and they got the money to kind of keep, to stay at that spot. But nah, like, you should still be competing with them. And if you don't get that spot, you should be getting the first wild card spot. Like, that's how much talent you have on that lineup alone. Nah, I'm with you, Will. Like, absolutely. Oh, man, that team should be fun to watch. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes. Tune in iHeartRadio and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Don't forget to subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Empire Media, at empiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Hey, man, thank you all for listening. I want to appreciate the homie Josh and Kev for being on the show. We appreciate y'all. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yiddig.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega.
Empire Media.
Oh, go ahead.
That's empiremedia.com.
My man, A Mega, lead us out, big homie. Peace.